You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
This is New Hampshire Now. We're at the New Hampshire Higher Education Summit, hosted by the New Hampshire College and University Council, joined by U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan. And Senator Hassan, in your view, what is the state of education here in New Hampshire, and what are the biggest challenges that educators and institutions face?
Well, we all know how important education is to all Granite Staters. It is really the pathway forward, and for people who want to work hard, get ahead and stay ahead, we know that most jobs in New Hampshire and across the country now require some level of secondary credential, whether it's an apprenticeship or workforce training or a community college or four-year degree. So what I was focusing on this morning are some of the challenges we face. We've always had strong educational system in New Hampshire, but we certainly know as we're trying to make sure that our students are prepared for the 21st century innovation-based economy, that they have everything they need. So talking to this group about the challenges, particularly to higher education, I was focusing on affordability, accountability, access, and safety. We know how expensive colleges in this day and age. We really have to continue to work on making sure all students have access to all the financial aid they can get. So one of the things we're doing in Congress as we reauthorize the Higher Education Act is look at ways to simplify that FAFSA form. But we also know that we need to continue to expand the amount and reach of things like Pell Grants so that students aren't going into debt at the high rate that they are right now. Just talked to a young man a couple of weeks ago down in Salem working for Extreme Networks who is carrying $102,000 worth of debt at the age of 32. And that's the type of thing we need to really focus on when it comes to affordability. We have a number of other bills in Congress that would help us address that too and help address the student debt issue, letting students, for instance, refinance their loans and also letting employers help pay back some of those loans in tax-free payments to for employees.
You know, I see debt kind of across the board as being one of the biggest issues that we have in our nation, and in particular as we look towards a potential economic downturn at some point in the future, whether it's our nation, whether it's businesses or individuals, particularly students who are carrying a high amount of debt. And when they are, that limits their ability to play a significant role in the economy. And we're such a consumption-based economy. What specifically do you think can be done to decrease the debt load that students are carrying? There's obviously the cost of education, and there's that aspect of things, but there's also, you know, as you mentioned, the finance, the aspect of the percentage of the loan that individuals sign up for.
So, first of all, just making sure the process for applying for financial aid is as straightforward and streamlined as possible for students and their families. Second, we know we have to continue to provide students alternative pathways. So maybe you don't go right to a four-year college. Maybe you earn a credential that allows you to get a job with a good salary. You work for a while, and then you go get the next credential, and you do things in a stacked way so that you are working and going to school in ways that minimize your need to take out loans. But we also have the Jobs Act, which would extend the reach of Pell Grants so that they could cover, for instance, high-quality, rigorous apprenticeship programs. I was part of the group that supported this year's budget agreement that increased the amount of Pell Grants about 1.6%, I think. We need to continue to look at ways of that. We need to fight against proposals that the president has put forward that would take some of the Pell Grant reserve money, which is there to plan for economic downturns, among other things. And then there are a number of other bills that we have in place to really address everything from affordability and cost to making sure that we are aligning the curriculum that colleges have with workforce needs, that we are helping students overcome the other kinds of barriers. Cost is part of it, but so is childcare, so is transportation. So, for instance, could be healthcare or mental health care. So there are a number of bills moving forward that would help us address those things, too.
In conclusion, the U.S. Senate rebuked President Trump's national emergency, and in doing so, 12 Republican senators voted against it. Now, there's different ways to look at this. Rand Paul, in signaling that he was going to vote against it, allowed for Republicans to come forward and have some cover, so to speak, to oppose, as we saw a number of individuals after Rand Paul made that announcement say that they opposed it. Do you see, first on the national emergency itself, your takeaways on it being rebuked, but do you see this as being a change, perhaps, in Republicans becoming more bold in opposing Donald Trump, or is it more of the same?
Well, look, the president's decision to invoke the emergency declaration is really dubious constitutionally, and I think
right.
a number of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle truly understand that and believe it is their job to stand up for the Constitution. The fact that he invoked the emergency declaration just to keep up to keep a equally dubious campaign promise is really outrageous, and I think a number of my colleagues kind of reached their limit with where they would go in terms of a threat to the Constitution for a purpose that we know is a specious purpose. Border security continues to be really important. There continues to be really good informal bipartisan discussion about what we really need to do to help our frontline people at the border, but certainly one big wall is not it, and certainly I think the other thing that is concerning to all of us, including some of my Republican colleagues, is that the president is saying he may move defense funding from other projects to this one, and for all of us, that's really concerning. Here, that's very concerning for the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard and for Pease, the National Guard base.
Senator Hassan, it's always great to see you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council. Listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
We continue at the New Hampshire College and University Council's Higher Education Summit, and one of the main and most interesting topics of discussion was in regards to the mental health crisis, which we talk a lot about here on the program, and also I'm listening with Peter Evers, and welcome right now, General Don Bulldog, who has joined us previous on I'm Listening, and he is a panelist here at the summit. General, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much.
Great. Appreciate you joining us. And I think that one of the most important things that we need to do as a society is to integrate mental health awareness and services within multiple different aspects of our society. And you've focused, obviously, a lot in regards to the military, but I feel whether it's public education or higher education, that it's important that these discussions take place within school so that when kids are feeling certain ways, they feel depressed, they feel anxious, that those feelings are acknowledged and that there is support for that. And that gets kind of introduced at an age where perhaps it's not introduced currently.
I agree with you. We introduce physical injuries early on, and how our children and our society should respond to those, and we should do the same with mental health. You're not a broken ankle when you break your ankle, and this is a discussion I've had with former Chief Justice Broderick, right? And we both agree, you're not a broken ankle. Nobody says, oh, here comes the broken ankle. So nobody should say, well, here comes the PTS guy, right, or the PTS gal. They should recognize that it is a mental injury as well as, and should be treated just like a physical injury. And we should get our society to think about this and really internalize it and understand that the earlier that we educate our youngsters, our society, on this, the better off we're going to be. And we will drive down suicide rates. We will drive down unfortunate violent incidents that are occurring. And that's hugely important.
No, I completely agree. And there's so many children who are growing up in stressful situations in their homes right now with the opioid epidemic as prevalent as it is across our state. There are homes that children are facing stress every single day, and they don't understand it because they are a part of it and is a part of their lives. And that then manifests itself in the classroom. So that integration, and you know, not every public school, I'm sure, is going to be able to offer these types of programs. So I think that then the weight and burden kind of falls on on post-secondary education. And that is going to be something I think we see at a lot of colleges. UNH has it currently. And I think we're going to start to see an expansion because, you know, you mentioned, you know, post-traumatic stress, and to different individuals, that's different things. For you, it's obviously what you've seen, what you've been a part of in regards to the military. For others, it may be seeing mom get physically assaulted every night and not being able to do anything about it, or dad getting arrested. Mm-hmm. And those types of things then manifest themselves in the classroom. A student that is not receiving treatment for their mental illness and post-traumatic stress then acts out in the classroom and may assault or verbally abuse someone else because of that learned behavior. It's prevalent in our schools, and we hear it on a consistent basis, and post-traumatic stress manifests itself in many different ways.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. We have a couple of other things that kind of impact on mental health issues. You have, well, number one, you know, post-traumatic stress, and then you covered a variety of scenarios, and of course there's many more than that, mm-hmm. but you know, I think you covered it sufficiently. Then you have traumatic brain injuries that occur from yep. accidents that affect it, and PTS and TBI can be confused in the diagnosis, so we got to make sure that we're educating folks to understand the differences between PTS and TBI and the treatment therapies that go along with that. We have to really recognize that this is not medication is not a solution for mm-hmm. this, right? It is awareness. It is understanding. It is talking about it. It is giving people, destigmatizing it so people feel, and our children feel comfortable coming forward and saying, mm-hmm. hey, I'm struggling with this. There is nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with asking for help. And we have to teach them that they're stronger, not weaker, right? That they're not. Mm-hmm. If we do this and we destigmatize it, you know, a lot of families are embarrassed, mm-hmm. right? Oh, geez, what's wrong with my child? Or what's wrong with me? Or,
what
you know,
did
I'm
I,
embarrassed.
And
yeah.
they take
what did I do?
Right,
right.
right.
What did I do?
Right.
You did nothing, okay? Yeah. It is the stresses of society. It's the stresses of living in this world, this fast-paced world where speed of progress, people get left behind. And we can't let people get left behind. And so we have to be very proactive. So forums like this are hugely important, and you know, adults in our generation, you know, baby boomer generation, have to get comfortable with this, have mm-hmm. to get comfortable with talking about it so we can, you know, help others. I know, I don't have any studies to hang my hat on it, but I know based off of tragedies that have happened in military families that our children of military families, due to the 18-year war and the constant deployment, have committed suicide mm-hmm. because of their form of post-traumatic stress. Now, my wife is an expert at understanding what service member deployments do inside the family and what effect that has on the children. And we have to be more proactive about getting them help and helping them understand it so it doesn't manifest itself in some very destructive behavior later. That's something that could have been avoided earlier on.
General, in terms of what you're trying to achieve and what you're trying to bring about, I'm curious about that because you have obviously presented yourself as an individual who's extremely successful who has and is saying this is real. Post-traumatic stress, mental illness is real. Mm-hmm. The stigma needs to end, and this needs to be placed on a par with physical illness, which is incredibly important. But is there specific aspects of legislation or specific integration that you would like to see, whether it's at the military level and things that you've pushed for there, or in schools, whether it's post-secondary or in public schools, to address these issues, or the workplace as a whole? So what is the kind of the synopsis of your goals and your vision in pushing forth your story?
So number one, originally my goals were to highlight the mental health situation that service members are dealing with on active duty, right? One. And I did that on active duty by being the only and last general officer to come out publicly with my own struggles, right? Number one. Number two, when I retired, was to help veterans and their families with this, mm-hmm. right? And families extend to, of course, their children. And then as I got more involved in community-based programs, I realized, hey, there's more of a problem out there, and it's in our schools. I've talked to Merrimack High School about this. Mm-hmm. I've talked to a majority of the freshman class about this, and I'm being invited back, and I'm opening the door to speak at other things. So, my goal is to drive up awareness, drive up understanding, develop community-based solutions. Right now, we have, just take veterans for instance, we have four institutions, cabinet-level institutions, that are involved in dealing with this. We have the VA, Department of Defense, Housing and Urban Development, and Department of Labor, and soon Department of Education, right? So five organizations that are highly bureaucratic with top-down solutions that are not going to work. Mm-hmm. The president's latest effort to create more awareness on suicide with his cabinet-level task force is a great idea, but it will not work unless it gets separated from the bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. And how is that cabinet level going to integrate with these other four departments mm-hmm. who have cabinet level secretaries? And we have the Senate and we have the Congress. And I think everybody's well-intentioned, but the legislation focuses on top-down solutions and not community-based solutions.
Right.
I'm a community-based guy.
Yeah.
We're going to fix this in our communities. We're not going to fix it with a top-down approach, and we have to separate that out of the bureaucracy or we're not going to get, and that's what I'm trying to do.
And it has to be driven by peer-to-peer solutions.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that individuals like yourself, you need to talk with other military members because yep. you have a commonality of understanding of what it's like to go through that process. For a student or child of a military service member, same thing, where they, because of the PTS of one individual or because of the absence of that individual because of their deployment, there is significant ramifications on the child and burdens that mm-hmm. they feel, and they suffer as a result of that, and they need to have that peer-to-peer support. So to me, that's what it needs to be driven by, and you're 100% right. It's a grassroots level solution, and suicide prevention is not just a message. It is a message with solutions.
Right.
And with a message of, hey, suicide's not the option. Okay, then what is? And you have to have a person that is who understands suicide talk to individuals who are thinking about suicide. Very often campaigns are driven by market research and mm-hmm. and bureaucratic solutions, as opposed to, okay, let's bring in someone here who's tried to commit suicide, who has a knowledge and understanding of that, and have them break down for folks how you get to that point and what happens when you get to that point. And the same thing with PTS. And the person who understands it is the person that needs to communicate with the individual that is suffering from it. Otherwise, it just goes over their head.
That's exactly right. So I agree with you 100%. There has to be leaders, right?
Yeah.
And the higher level a person is, that can talk about this and can put their own skin in the game, the more effective the program becomes. And then you populate it with leaders, people who are willing to talk about their own situation to help out others. Because, I mean, that's how it grows. I always talk about helping one veteran at a time. Every talk that I've given at veterans organizations, I've received feedback that at least one service member or one veteran at the function decided to go for help.
Yeah.
Now, one veteran at a time. That turns into 10 other veterans because they have other veterans in their life
right.
that are looking at them and say, you know what? If John went, I'm going to go, yeah. right? And that's hugely important. Suicide's the outcome,
mm-hmm.
right? We have to get at the root causes.
Or drug abuse or
right.
alcoholism.
That's yeah. exactly right. There yeah. are root causes that have to get at. Suicide prevention, everybody wants to, oh, how are we going to do this? And we're going to do it top down. No. The problems are bottom up, and we have to get at those root causes. And if we don't get at them, and we need programs to get at them, then the suicide rate is not going to go down, right? It's just not. So that's the real message. I mean, that's what we really have to achieve is that bottom up, grassroots, community based, develop leaders there, people who want to talk about it, and get the message out and not be afraid to talk about it. It's not embarrassing, right? You become stronger, you become a better version of yourself, you become more resilient, right? And that's what we want. We want resilience back in our society so people can bounce back from setbacks and failure.
General Bulldog, as always, great to see you. It's such an important message, and we appreciate your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for your interest in this and getting the message out. It's hugely important.
General Don Bulldog joining us here on New Hampshire Now as we come to you from New Hampshire's Higher Education Summit. This hour of the program is brought to you by the Prescription Center, and that segment of the show brought to you by the Concord Photo Service.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now.